FMR.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. I wonder if you were at the concert with the Mzansi Philharmonic this past week, when you would have heard the internationally famous conductor Kirill Karabits and the orchestra playing, among other things, the Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin with our own Leo Gefisser as soloist, and also Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov. The principal viola in that orchestra is Louise Lansdowne, a violist, educator, and philanthropist, serving as assistant head of strings at the Royal Northern College of Music and professor of viola at the Yehudi Menuhin School. Louise directs both the Lionel Tertius Competition and the Cecil Aronovitz International Viola Competition, which she also founded. Along with her students, she launched the ARCO Distance Learning Project, based in South Africa and India. So there's lots to find out, especially about the viola. So Louise, welcome, a warm welcome indeed.
Thank you so much for having me.
I was right in saying, wasn't I, that you're the principal viola with the Mzansi Philharmonic?
Yes, I'm thrilled to say I really am.
And do you come out regularly, or is this your first visit with the orchestra?
This is my third visit.
Oh, you've been for the other national tours?
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing I want to ask you, I've read over the years a lot about Kirill Karabits. What was it like working with him?
Oh, we've had real fun. He's a real perfectionist, and he's been really... He's got into the African spirit of things.
Yes, because there's an African piece that started the program.
There is. It's great. So he's been fantastic, really fun, and he seems to be enjoying the South African atmosphere.
Sunshine
and warmth. Yeah, and the people, I think, most of all.
Oh, really? How did you get involved with Mzansi? I know you were born in this country, you are South African, but now living in the UK. How did you get involved with Mzansi, which is relatively new? I think it's third or fourth year.
This is my third tour with Mzansi, and I just got a fantastic message inviting me to be part of this, and anything to do with South Africa, I jump at with both arms,
and
I'm here like a shot. Me and my viola are here like a shot.
Why is that, Louise? Is that a silly question for me to ask? Is it the wonderful summer weather you experience when you come to Cape Town in December?
No. I just adore South Africa. I miss it terribly. And in 1998, when I left, I am really lucky to have carved a beautiful career for myself in the UK, but I miss South Africa every day. And actually, if I had a choice, I'd bring my whole life and career to South Africa and be here all the time. Yeah.
Where were you born in South Africa?
In Cape Town.
Oh, you're a Cape Townian.
I'm a Cape Townian through and through, and I studied at UCT and Stellenbosch, and I've had the most extraordinary education in South Africa that definitely prepared me for everything I was lucky enough to do.
I think I said you studied at UCT originally, didn't you?
Yes, with Lamar Crowson. I was a pianist before I was a viola player.
Were you?
Yes. And I studied piano it was my first instrument for most of my studying life. And then in 1992, I was in a very bad car accident between Beaufort West and Laingsburg. And I always joke and say it was the bump on the head that knocked some sense into me, but it was at that moment that I decided to change direction, and I was playing the viola as a second instrument. I started at the Beausoleil Music Center and with David Snaith.
Good.
And
names we know.
Absolutely. And then when I went to UCT while studying with Lamar Crowson, I also learned the viola with Jürgen Schwietering, but it wasn't my thing yet. And somehow the car accident I had was my realization.
Yeah.
A moment.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
Did the car accident do any damage to you as regards playing the piano?
Not at all. I broke my spine and I had other, pretty serious injuries. But I think somehow I felt like I was going to be the viola. I don't know what it was. The voice of the viola called me. It was in that moment that I changed from studying at the University of Cape Town to Stellenbosch. I met Jack DeWet. I met Eric Rycroft. and that
Gosh,
just
been
completely
with all the big names.
That just changed. Yeah, absolutely changed my life.
So my next question was going to be, why the viola? But I think you just answered that because you said the voice of the viola. There's something about that sort of mid-range sound, is there?
Yeah, and I think there's something about the sound, there's something about the repertoire, there's something about the fact that everyone tends to joke about violists and, you know, feel a bit sorry for them, that they're, you know, we're a sort of slightly strange race. And I do feel that the viola has slight alternative people attached to it that have very niche and wonderful interests. And I thought it was an instrument worth supporting, devoting my life to.
But the repertoire for the viola orchestrally is very rich, as we know,
yes,
with wonderful parts written by the great composers, Beethoven, Brahms, Mozart for the viola. But the solo work, there's not that much solo work, and I think you're going to introduce us to some this very day.
I am, but what's immensely exciting is there's a lot more solo music than you can imagine.
That's already written, that's not been transcribed.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's have a taste of your first piece, and ironically, it's Bach, one of his cello suites, which someone naughtily arranged for viola. Tell me about this that we're going to listen to.
Yes, this music is arranged for viola, but it suits the viola so beautifully, the solo cello suites. And we have the same strings as the cello. And yes, it sounds a little bit different on the viola, but I think equally beautiful, if not a bit more. I'm sure that Bach wouldn't argue with me. The viola was his favorite instrument.
Was it really?
It was. And delighted that one of the world's greatest viola players, Nobuko Imai, and who is a wonderful friend, one of the most respected musicians you can imagine, is playing this music.
Thank you.
That was Bach, and I wonder if you noticed, actually, that it was one of the movements from his cello suite number 6, the Saraband, arranged for viola and played by Nobuko Imai. And I think, well, my guest is Louise Lansdowne. She's our viola ambassador here today. I think we agree with you that the sound is different, but as warm and as engaging.
For sure.
For sure. You said you were a friend of Nobuko Imai who played that. Is the viola fraternity quite close? Because you also said something about they are, I don't think you said odd people, but they have interests that are unusual. Is it a small group, viola players, internationally?
I suppose comparatively, if one imagines maybe the number of E-string protagonists there are out there, and for those of you who are not quite sure what I'm talking about, those are violinists.
You call them E-strings?
Yes, we call them the E-stringers. We are terribly precious about our C-strings as viola players. So yes, I would say maybe the fraternity is quite small, but maybe unlike the reputation with violinists where everything's terribly competitive and stressed out, violists are the most relaxed, most friendly, most loving and sharing community. And I think that's, we all have this song that we sing with our C-strings. So I think that we also protect one another. We look after our repertoire and our music. And we're always trying to initiate new music, new commissions, encourage more people to play the viola, encourage more people to know about the viola. And hopefully we're having a bit of impact out there.
Louise, just, well, I don't know, actually. You say the C string. What are the strings on the viola?
I mean, they're actually the same as the cello at A, D, G, C.
A, D, G, C.
Yeah.
And on the violin?
They're going to be E, A, D, G. Okay. But the viola is one octave higher than the cello. So it sits in its register in this gorgeous place in between the violin and cello. And so often the human voice is most clearly kind of described within the sound of the viola. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if one did think about that, if you're enjoying this little viola trip that we're having,
yes.
Brahms's songs, Opus 91 for mezzo-soprano, a viola and piano, are an absolute must.
I have just introduced a local mezzo to those songs, two of them, which are with Ann-Sophie Mutter, and the most wonderful songs. So there's some homework for you at home to do to find these songs. Opus 71.
91.
Yeah. By Brahms. And the way I was introduced to the viola and really made me sit up and take notice was Mozart's Pechelstadt Trio, the trio for clarinet, viola, and piano, because the clarinet and viola seem to go so well together.
Absolutely. And there are other beautiful works by Kurtag, by Schumann, Bruch. Really wonderful, wonderful music for that combination.
And there's Harold in Italy by Berlioz.
Yes, absolutely.
So those are things. The fact that you are very much, it sounds like a sort of ambassador for the viola, which is a great sort of idea. Do you find that playing in an orchestra, because you do so much else, do you enjoy playing in an orchestra?
Yeah, I love it.
Like you've just done with the Mzanzi.
Yeah, I've loved every minute of it. And to be honest, because most of my work in the UK is teaching chamber music, doing some solo things, and very little bits of orchestral work, I don't often get the time to indulge in it. So it's been fantastic.
I like the way you use the word indulge.
Yes.
And certainly the program you've just done with that Scheherazade must have been wonderfully indulgent for you.
Yes, absolutely.
So I would like to ask you now just a few questions about your various projects in England. First of all, why did you go to England in the first place? Why did you leave your beloved South Africa?
Well, I didn't want to leave beloved South Africa, but I got the Associated Board of the Royal Schools of Music scholarship to go and study at the Royal Northern College of Music to do postgraduate study. It was kind of irresistible.
I'm sure.
And which meant that I had all my fees and living paid for. It was really an astonishing opportunity. So I just embraced it and had no idea what would come of it. I wrenched myself away from Cape Town. And it's still not easy.
And the rest is history, as they say. But just tell me some of these things. You direct the Lionel Tertius. Is it Tertius?
Tertius.
Tertius competition. and the Cecil Aronovitz International Viola Competition.
Yes.
Tell me about those.
Well, back in 2003, I was lucky enough to get Cecil Aronovitz's viola. And this viola was played on by Eric Rycroft since 1983. And Eric has now passed on, but at the time, he had got the viola after Cecil Aronovitz actually died on stage playing the viola, playing the Mozart C major quintet in the UK. And for those of you who can cast your mind back a very long time, Cecil Aronovitz was a Lithuanian South African violist who was born in King Williamstown in 1916. And he went to the Royal Study at the Royal College in the 1930s. And he made huge numbers of historic recordings with the Amadeus Quartet, Yehudi Menuhin, William Pleath, and others. And in 1978, he was playing on the stage at Snape Maltings in Aldborough, and he had a stroke and died.
In the middle of the work?
In the middle of the piece. And
what a way to go.
What a way to go. Musician. Exactly. And Cecil's viola was in many pieces. And
oh, did it break?
It broke. It broke,
When he fell?
He fell, and at the time, somebody picked up the pieces and took it to the amazing Charles Beer, who was based in London. And Charles lovingly spent 5 years putting the viola back together.
5 years.
5 years. And Eric had studied with Cecil Aronovitz at the Royal College in the late 60s, early 70s. And some time after Charles had finished putting the viola back together, Eric contacted Nicola, Cecil's widow, and asked if she would consider selling the viola to him, which she did. And Eric played on it. He used to travel on his motorbike, you know, from Stellenbosch to Cape Town. He'd always be playing in what was then called K-Pab and the orchestras, and Eric absolutely loved this viola so much. But after he had his accident in the late 90s on his motorbike, he was not able to play anymore. So eventually, I was unbelievably lucky.
In the right place at the right time, I dare say.
Yes.
So he also had an accident, fortunately without the viola, I hope. And I see, he said, checking his notes here, that it's a French viola, circa 1750.
Yes.
With an 1890 Sartori bow.
Yes. Wonderful.
We plebs, bows, how important a bow is if you're playing a good instrument. So tell me about the Sartori bow.
Oh, well, the Sartori bow also has an amazing little story attached to it. And the first Cecil Aronovitz International Viola Competition, I founded it in 2014. I was desperate for the world to remember Cecil and his contribution to music. And at the time, one of the jury members said, "Louise, I've got a surprise for you." I said, "Okay." And he came into my teaching room a couple of days before the competition started. It's a wonderful guy called Emil Kantor, a German violist. He said, "Oh, I'm just going to close your eyes." I said, "Okay." And he played me some different bows, and he said, "Which one do you like the best?"
Oh, he played you different bows?
Yeah.
On your violin, on your viola?
On my viola, yeah. He played me a few different bows. He said, "Which one do you like the best?" And I kept on saying, bow number two or whatever it was. And he said, "Louise, I've got a surprise for you. This was Cecil's Sartori bow. And would you like it?" I mean, he didn't give it to me. I had to buy it from him. Mm-hmm. Absolutely magnificent. It's a very early Sartori bow. It's a little bit shorter than your normal bow. And it's very, very light. It's 66 grams. So for a viola bow, that's pretty light. And it's just gorgeous.
Now, tell me about your next piece of music, which I see William Henry Reed, a rhapsody for viola and piano.
Yes.
What are we going to hear?
You are going to hear the most extraordinary, virtuosic, wonderful piece of music from this English composer. Now, he, like many, was inspired by the great Lionel Tertius. And this work is played by Timothy Ridout, one of the world's greatest young violists and a South African pianist,
James Bailey,
both who are wonderful friends of mine. William Henry Reed was actually Edward Elgar's biographer. He was also the concertmaster of the London Symphony Orchestra for 23 years. And he was the go-to person for Elgar to try out his violin concerto and all of his violin music. So actually, William Henry Reed was so inspired by Lionel Tertius that he wrote this rhapsody for him. Actually, the music is really initially with orchestra. That's what originally what it was written for. And it was premiered at the Sir Henry Wood's Proms at the time. But actually, the orchestral score has since been lost. Only four pages of it are left in the Royal College of Music library that I went to go and hunt down. And after a very forensic search, I've not had any luck to find it. But a friend of mine, wonderful, wonderful musician called Michael Fryan, has completed the orchestral score. Today, you will not hear that, though, but you will hear Timothy Ridout and James Baillieu play this fantastic work.
Thank you.
That was the Rhapsody for Viola and Piano by William Henry Reed, a Lionel Tertius celebration. And we heard Timothy Rudo, viola, and also the South African James Bailu was the pianist there. And my guest on People of Note this week is Louis Lansdowne, who is in Cape Town, a place she loves, because she was playing, among other things, she played with the Mzansi National Philharmonic earlier this week in their concert in Cape Town. I'd mentioned a couple of times, Louise, Lionel Tertius, in collaboration with Cecil. Just tell me more about Lionel Tertius.
Lionel Tertius was born in a place called Hartlepool in 1876, a very unprepossessing place in the northeast of England. And he didn't actually spend that long there, but very soon he moved towards London, and the rest is really history with Lionel. He discovered the viola not too far into his life, and he called it the love and tyrant of his life. And he probably, out of anyone you could mention to do with the viola, has done the most for the instrument. There are literally thousands of pieces dedicated, commissioned, composed by, arranged by Lionel Tertius for the viola. He was the one who encouraged and insisted upon viola professors at conservatoires. They didn't really exist, not really, until Lionel absolutely force-fed and made sure the world, you know, had specialist viola teachers. Yeah. He also worked along with the luthiers to create what was known as the Tertius model viola. It's an absolute beast and almost unplayable, and Lionel was a really tiny man. He actually visited South Africa, and you know, his legacy is unsurpassed.
Why is it a beast?
It was huge.
Because of the size?
Yeah, he absolutely wanted the viola to have this gigantic sound. He thought the viola needed to be enormous to have, you know, a really good big sound. But, you know, I think it probably broke a couple of people's backs.
Did you try it?
Yeah, I mean, I can't play it. It's too big.
Oh, okay.
But I think a few people, you know, who are built quite tall with long, long arms can probably get away with playing them. But he absolutely devoted every second of his life to furthering the journey of the viola, and we definitely have him to thank for so much.
And hence your competition, the Lionel Tertius competition.
Yes. Well, the Lionel Tertius competition actually didn't have anything to do with me at the start. That's been going for 44 years, and it's been run on the Isle of Man, beautiful little place called Port Erin on the Isle of Man. And it was started by Lillian Tertius, Lionel's wife, and the most wonderful guy called John Bethel, who ran it for years and years. Now, for the very first time, along with the Cecil Aronowitz Viola competition, which I did found 10 years ago, the two competitions are being run concurrently at what is called the Glasshouse International Centre for Music, which is in Gateshead in the northeast of England, just down the road from Tertius's birthplace. And they are happening the 19th to the 25th of January, 2025. They will be streamed live, you South Africans, so watch out for it. And we have a website with everything on it that you could possibly wish for.
Tell us the
As
website,
a violist, okay. Just look for Tertius and Aronowitz International Viola Competitions. It's a mouthful, but it won't be when you listen. So follow us live, and it's going to be Viola Frenzy and Mania for a week in the UK.
Frenzy. Tell me about ARCO, the ARCO Distance Learning Project, based in South Africa and India.
Yes, this is a long-distance online distance learning project that I founded in 2015. The first project was run at the Maurice Isaacson Center for Music in Soweto until earlier this year. And then we have a similar project, which is based in Chennai in India, where we work with the Sunshine Orchestra, who are the brainchild of the Bollywood sensation A.R. Rahman. He is the amazing guy who wrote the music for Slumdog Millionaire and so much else. And these two projects are sort of dual purpose. They act as teacher training projects, and they also act as outreach and music training projects on the ground. So actually, for a long time, I was a head of strings at the Royal Birmingham Conservatoire, which is where I founded it. And my students in Birmingham were teacher trained to teach young students in South Africa and India, which has been the most fascinating journey. We've brought kids out to the UK from both South Africa and India. We've come to South Africa and India to visit, to run festivals. Some students have come to study in the UK. Others Wow. have come to festivals and courses. And it's an incredibly rich learning experience for everybody involved.
Gosh, that sounds wonderful. And so does it, the ARCO thing in South Africa, for example, does it run only at certain times? Or is it a permanent thing with teachers?
It's a permanent thing with teachers.
It's a fixture.
It's a fixture. And the new ARCO project, which is about to be launched in January 2025, is now going to be in a beautiful part of the Karoo called Prince Albert.
That'll make people in Prince Albert very happy, I'm sure.
Yeah, we've got 70 kids signed up for teachers to have lessons. And I've managed to get 75 instruments here on private jets the last couple of months. And the last 17 cellos arrived about 3 weeks ago at ExecuJet in Cape Town. So thank you. And we have all our instruments, and our teachers will be arriving in January. And it's going to be, I just watch this space.
When will it be in Prince Albert?
It will live in Prince Albert permanently. Yes, it will live in Prince Albert. We are working with the Prince Albert Community Trust. And with all the schools in Prince Albert, the creches, we actually are starting with babies. We're starting with the four-year-olds. So we've got 16th size basses, cellos, violas, and violins that we're starting with. And we're teaching several creches and primary school children in Prince Albert. There's going to be an orchestra in Prince Albert by February.
That's such good news. So here's the stupid question. It's not only violas, the all the string instruments.
Yes, violas. I allow the others to have a look in sometimes.
The E stringers,
yeah,
for example. Now, we're going to take another piece of music, and I'm interested in your apparent fascination with Paul Hindemith, the composer, but we'll talk about him more afterwards. But just introduce this piece, a sonata for viola and piano by Paul Hindemith.
Yes, well, this is his first work that he wrote for the viola in 1919, about 6 weeks after he came back from fighting in World War I. And I think he just wanted to change. I'll tell you a little more after our break, but this is called his Fantasy Sonata, Opus 11, Number 4, and you will hear a wonderful, wonderful violist, Antoine Tamestet.
Thank you.
That was music by Paul Hindemith, his Viola Sonata, the Sonata for Viola and Piano, Opus 11, No. 4. Anton Temistit was the viola player, and the pianist Marcus Hadula. And we heard just one movement of the work there. Apparently there are three movements, Louise, is that right?
Yes, they are, and actually it's a work all in one, so it's played without stopping.
Oh,
but
okay.
That was the first movement entitled Fantasy.
My guest, by the way, is Louise Lansdowne, a violist, educator, and philanthropist, if you've heard. And Hindemith is clearly a very important person in your life, and I'm intrigued to know why. And you're writing a book called Hindemith and the Viola, soon to be published.
Yes. Well, I have to thank a wonderful teacher from Stellenbosch University for my Hindemith fetish, should I say.
Okay.
And this is Winfried Ludemann. He was my musicology lecturer at the University of Stellenbosch. Actually, Eric Rycroft is also partially to blame for this.
I like the way you said to blame.
And he actually got me to play this beautiful fantasy sonata when I was at university. And one thing led to another. And I discovered that Hindemith, more than any other composer on earth, has written the most music for the viola.
He himself was a viola player, wasn't he?
He initially trained as a violinist. And the first part of his career was as a concertmaster in the opera orchestra in Frankfurt and playing violin in a string quartet. But actually, he so soon saw the light. and he just absolutely wrote reams and reams of the most amazing music for the viola.
A lot of his music, best be careful what I say now, since I have a fetish about Hindemith and the viola, can be a little academic, I often find, Hindemith's music. Am I saying quite the wrong
thing?
You're
being very, very diplomatic.
Am I? What do you think I mean?
I think that one could find some of Hindemith's music challenging, not mm-hmm. only challenging to play, but maybe also challenging to understand. But he wrote such fantastic music, full of humor, which lots of people don't really hear sometimes. I think that is because very often people start with his later music, which is somehow more complex, one could say, maybe a little turgid, some of it. But his viola music, a lot of it was written in the 1920s. Also fantastic music in the 1930s. And you need to take the time to really get to know Hindemith and his genius before you judge.
All right, now we've heard from the master there. But he wrote some lovely orchestral. He had a lovely way. That piece he wrote called Metamorphosis on Themes of Weber, which is for a large orchestra, is wonderfully colorful and effective, like the Matisse de Mahler,
yes,
his symphony.
Yeah, I mean, I think because Hindemith became famous or infamous in the early 1920s after his three one-act operas were premiered. Very, should I say, contentious subject matter from these operas. And little by little, you know, he was a huge name in the 20s and 30s. And then because of political situation and a partially Jewish wife, he had a very complex history. After the mid-1930s, his music wasn't permitted to be played in Germany, and he was forced to leave his home country, and he wound up living for the next 12 years or so in the USA. And but his viola music is a journey through his life, and it's a very personal one. And if you take the time, like I've done, to really, really understand and look at it, you see and hear the story of an incredible human being that tells you a lot about history, too.
If I can remember, my favorite conductor of all time, Wilhelm Furtwängler, helped Hindemith at one stage.
In 1934.
Yes.
Yes, there was a time when Hindemith was fighting for his artistic life, and Hitler had labeled him as a Bolshevist and as a kind of non-loyal German artist and musician. Mm-hmm. And Furtwängler tried incredibly hard to help save Hindemith, but...
And so this book, Hindemith and the Viola, is it an academic book for viola players, or is it a good read with a glass of wine?
Look, you're going to need wine with it. That's okay. For sure. Maybe quite a bit.
Right.
Fine wine, though.
Yes.
It is a book that is going to talk about every single piece that Hindemith wrote that has the viola in it, except for orchestral music. All the chamber music, all of the songs, all of viola pieces that have very unusual titles, and it's going to have everything, all of the sonatas, all of the concertos, everything. But it's going to be a kind of go-to. Anything you need to know about Hindemith and his viola music, you can look it up. It's going to be also a player's guide. I've got some wonderful contributions from Tabea Zimmermann, Nobuko Imai, Timothy Ridout, the list goes on, Samuel Rhodes, wonderful people who have contributed to the book. And it hopefully is going to be something you might find quite funny. Hindemith was actually quite funny.
that's very hard to believe.
Yes.
From this angle. But I believe you because of your passion for Hindemith that's coming through. One other thing before we reach the end of our program, Louise, is what is this here, a documentary called Cinderella No More?
Ah.
What is that?
Well, this Cinderella No More was the title of Lionel Tertius's very first autobiography. And this was in the 1950s. I don't think he thought he was going to live till he was 99. He actually died in 1975, so he was an extraordinary age. But actually, he wrote another book called My Viola and I, and Cinderella No More was no more. So I entitled this documentary that I made over lockdown in the UK with Timothy Ridout and James Bailiw. We went to Benjamin Britten's home in Aldborough in his library, and we locked ourselves away literally, and we recorded over 47 pieces inspired by Lionel Tertius. And so this documentary is in 7 episodes. The last 3 are coming out next month, just to coincide with the double viola competition frenzy. And
I love it.
That is going to come out, and hence Cinderella No More, the English viola legacy. And I am South African, but I absolutely appreciate what Lionel Tertius has done for my instrument.
But you've just said something interesting. It seems as though English composers took to the viola more than the general composers. I said Mozart introduced me to the viola with that trio of his, but English composers seem to have written wonderful music for the viola.
We have Lionel Tertius to thank for every single piece of music.
Now listen, we've got a piece here called Ibuyile e Africa. Tell me what are we going to hear now?
Oh,
does this involve a viola?
No, actually, this involves a really wonderful South African cellist called Abel Salachwe. He is from Sebokeng. He's somebody I've known for a really long time and respect hugely. And this piece of music actually was arranged by my gorgeous friend Samson Diamond. And Abel, I think, fell in love with Samson's arrangement of this. And he just does it so wonderfully. So I am South African through and through, and I couldn't leave that out.
Well, here we are. That's a lovely introduction, and good old Abel as well. I'm glad you mentioned Samson Diamond, because I got to know him quite well in Johannesburg with the Soweto, Basket Soweto project. And he has really shot off, hasn't it?
Absolutely. He's amazing.
He doesn't play the viola.
He's tried.
Okay.
I forced him to try.
Okay. Is it easy to switch between violin and viola?
Yeah. I mean, it depends. Like, some people find it, because it is a little bit of a size difference, a little bit of space, and your ear's got to be good, you know, to move seamlessly in between the two. But I think if you have a really good ear, then
you're okay.
And if you're quite flexible, and I think maybe just reading the alto clef is a bit of a,
kind of
just got to get your head around it. But
exactly.
Once you've done that, I think, you know, it's no problem.
Well, now, thank you very much. I've been talking, by the way, to Louise Lansdowne before your last piece, a violist, as we now know, educator and philanthropist. She serves as assistant head of strings at the Royal Northern College of Music and professor of viola at the Yehudi Menuhin School. That's quite a thing as well. So congratulations, Louise. And Louise has been in Cape Town, where you love so much, to perform with the Mzansi Philharmonic in the last few days. And shortly, you're going to go through to Prince Albert to get everything ready.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's a festival with all these young players we spoke about coming down.
Actually, it's the ARCO project that is starting in Prince Albert in January 2025. And this is an outreach project, teaching project, that is hopefully going to have hundreds and hundreds of children in the community playing string instruments.
Why did you choose Prince Albert, apart from the fact that it's very special?
Well, last year, all my friends had said, oh, Louise, you've got to go to Prince Albert when you're in South Africa. It's so beautiful. So booked to go on a three-day holiday in Prince Albert. And within 24 hours, I decided to buy a house, and that the ARCO project was moving there, and that was it. I'm just absolutely adore it.
Is it going to be centered in your house?
Actually, the teaching will take place at the Prince Albert Community Trust, but currently there are like 50 instruments sitting in my house, and the rest of them are making their way to Prince Albert on Thursday.
Now, look, just before I say goodbye, thank you very much for inspiring us about the viola and for the music you've played featuring the viola. Enjoy your stay. I'm sure you'll come back because you love South Africa so much. And all the best with your projects and your passion and your book. We'll look out for it, Hindemith and the Viola. And now we play with the cellist, Abel Tselatshwe, this piece, Ibuyile I Africa. Louise Lansdowne, thank you. People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Theatre on the Bay brings you VR Theatrical, A Christmas Carol, from 10 to 14 December, offering families of all ages an opportunity to experience the magical world of Charles Dickens. Starring me, Zach Hendricks, with Angela Sparks. A family experience like no other, past, present, or future. Don't be a Scrooge. Catch A Christmas Carol from 10 to 14 December. Only at Theatre on the Bay. FMR.